Welcome to Starving Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us with a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk's website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702. Also, if you want to, I also co-broadcast over on twitch.tv. Just go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. And you can join the chat room there too, where there's always a lot of, there's quite a few people there. So come and join us. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, I have a few other Twitter accounts, mainly the sfuoncall, Twitter account, which is for the podcast, so that you can, you want to follow that. You can see what's going to be the topic for the evening, and also you get a direct link to the YouTube videos that are of the podcast that I've been doing for, I think, over a year now. It's been a while. And, of course, I also have my personal account, which is Paul Franz, P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. Just a reminder that I'm a avid Catholic O's fan, and I love tech. So if any of those bother you, don't follow me. And, of course, my other account is, of course, my business account, which is for Franz Games. So if you want to see what's keep an eye on what's going on with Franz Games, what's going on with, Starfleet Warlord, SFB Online, FedCom Online, those kind of things. Just follow Franz Games and you will just keep up to date on that. Quick news from A to B this week, which is a no update on Steve Patrick's recovery. Our prayers and thoughts are with him. Not much, no announcement when it comes to what's coming up when it comes to Shapeways. There should have been ones, I think, this week. But, they usually post it on Facebook. I have not seen anything on that. But, of course, that's usually Jean's purview. And Jean, probably still recovering from her surgery and so forth. Just keep her in your prayers and thoughts also. Just a reminder, there's many free things that you can get from StarfleetGames.com. There's a whole section. It doesn't call it free section, but you can go for different resources. You can get from anywhere from links to get to the latest cadet training manual for SFB. Obviously, there's first missions for FedCom. That is basically the cadet training manual, but for FedCom. Which is a nice way to start it. They're absolute free. They don't cost you anything. So you can get an idea of what SFB and FedCom are like. Of course, if you're listening to me, you don't know what they're like, try them. I'd be shocked. That means, well, it's possible you are. You might be an F&E person. But definitely keep an eye on that. And just a reminder, ADB actually has a Twitter account, which is ADBINC_Amarillo. That's ADBINC. That's incorporated, abbreviation for incorporated, _Amarillo. So if you don't know how to spell Amarillo, well, go look it up. Moving on to SFB Online tournaments. Obviously, with Steve Patrick out, just unavailable, we're not having any Sapphire Star tournaments at the moment. Those will continue at some point, but the reminder, we are continuing to have the NetKill tournament. So if you want to, you can participate. It's really simple to participate. All you got to do, get online, drop in to the server, or even if you want to, set up a game date with a friend of yours or an enemy of yours. And so you can play a tournament game online, then report that game. And after you report that game, then, we'll keep track. And then hopefully, if you win enough games and play enough games, that you will be rewarded, if you've actually win at the very end, a 3-month subscription to SAP Online. And then, of course, if you want to, you can have your call sign changed to have Sir or Cyber Knight. That is, of course, that is completely and utterly optional, because I know that also can cause some issues. Moving onward to FedCom, no library progress there, no SAP, you know, conversion library progress there either. And of course, with the SAP, a lot of that's just PFs and Omega ships, and those are going to be harder to get the background images. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's Solano Paul Farman, welcoming you to Star for the Universe on call. And tonight, well, just me and the lovely, lovely chat room. I know Dave's already here, and I'm sure Chris and possibly Iggy will be showing up. So if you're not on Twitch at the moment, why aren't you? Well, I can understand certain cases, but, you know, it's 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. For those of you in the know, hey Chris. So that means it's like 6:30 Pacific time. So if you're in the United States, that shouldn't be too harsh. I understand when it comes to on the other side of the pond, it's a 5-hour difference. So this would actually be 2:00 in the morning. So. Unless you are one of those people who likes to stay up late. Okay, don't go to sleep. Like my daughter. Who normally she gets up at around... These days she's been actually... She goes to bed, gets up around 3:00 in the morning, and then she does things. So she's actually been doing kind of a normal schedule, which is weird. But anyhow, that's not why I'm here to talk to you about. I'm not here to talk about my daughter. I'm here to talk to you about Starfleet Universe stuff. In this case, actually tonight, we're going to be talking about SAP movement rules. I figured one thing I was thinking about, and I thought it might be a neat kind of offshoot for the program, which is one, you know, I'm going to go through some of the rules for SAP, probably FedCom at some point too. Also, if you guys out there have questions for me, please send me an email, sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. And if I can't answer them, I will research it and look it up. Because whether it is, I can check the, obviously, discussion board will have quite a few answers there. There's also, of course, the previous captain's logs have lots of answers to rules questions. And, you know, of course, that one time I was a judge for Origins for the Gold Hat tournament. And so that, you know, I am pretty knowledgeable about the rules. And if I can't answer it, then what we'll do is we will struggle through it together, which I think. What was it? I was reading. Yeah, that's what it was. I've been reading up on ham radios. And one thing they're mentioning, and I definitely agree that this is true, that sometimes the best way to know something is to teach it. You know? And I feel like that is very true. So, you know, because if you can't teach it, then you really don't know it. And sometimes you don't know what you know until you teach it, you know. In my case, the best way to really learn something is actually application of that. So, but you know, the teaching it shows if you know it or not. If you don't know it, then you'll learn, you know. But anyhow, moving onward to SAP rules, I got, you know, the movement rules section. Actually, there were certain things I wanted to mention right off the top of the bat, which I wanted to mention last week, and then Barry and I went crazy. Okay. Number one, which is rule C1.3. And some people, if you've been listening to me, you know about these rules. because I've been so much a proponent of plotted movement. It's crazy. As I've mentioned before, that when I played Starmada, that's the one thing that just hooked me for Starmada, which was plotted movement. And it's not that it's grand scale plotted movement. You have to plot movement for 32 impulses. Though it was one turn in Starmada, but Starmada, if you did a full movement count, full movement, usually it was 6 hexes. Now, the thing is with Starmada, it's vector it was vector based, so that you have a starting speed of 6. You could have usually start as being a 0. You have a starting speed of 6, and you can go from 6 to 12, and you can keep going. Though there's a problem with going faster in Starmada when it comes to movement, which was, of course, if you went too fast, you couldn't turn. So the only thing you could do at some a certain point is you just have to brake. You have to just apply, more and more, reverse thrust until you finally get down to a point where you can actually turn. Because the cost of turning is equal to the speed that you're at. So that's one hex side. So that was, it gets expensive. So anyway, okay. Now, as of at the current set of rules, now it says here at the beginning of the rules, which is players may elect by mutual consent either pre-plotted or free movement. Now, I think a lot of people here are familiar with free movement. That is, the whole idea is that you have order of precedence. You might have to do simultaneous movement. Simultaneous movement is basically movement of last resort, usually after you went down the order of precedent. When it comes to, okay, you first have monsters move, and then you have change, which this is an interesting one, which is change in temporal elevation, except for seeking weapons, which is basically that temporal elevation, which is the temporal elevator, which is that Andromeda weapon, which is, I've never used. I've read about it, but I never used it. Which is interesting because that means it's actually part of movement that does it. Then ships move, then nimble ships move, then fighters and shuttles, and finally seeking weapons. And then base rotates, then ships with tactical maneuvers move, then nimble ships with tactical maneuvers, then fighters with tactical maneuvers, then non-shuttles. Non-fighter shuttles cannot do tactical maneuvers. I didn't know that, which is one of those things that we learned tonight, which is non-fighter shuttles cannot tack. You can do it for fighters. You can do it for nimble ships. You can do it for ships. Can't do it for non-fighter shuttles. Now, and so that's the way you would do it. Now, the other one, which is now considered optional, back in the day, it was considered the way you played. That was not optional, which is called pre-plotted movement, which I'm sure people have heard about. Now, Chris, I'm reading, this is not from C3A. This is pure, when it comes to, if you're talking about the temporal elevator, it's not C3A. It's part of normal Andromeda rules. Temporal elevator is just that temporal elevator is only available for bases. I forget how big of a base you need to have for a temporal elevator. It's an interesting thing. Let's get sidetracked for a moment for the temporal elevator, because it's interesting. In that the temporal elevator, the one thing about the temporal elevator is that originally it was, the idea was to have that to be able to combat seeking weapons. It didn't work that well. Because basically all it does is slows them down, slows ships down, slows seeking weapons down. The idea was that it would reduce the effectiveness of those seeking weapons. But of course, the temporal elevator, That's possible. Dave's saying that he believes that the temporal elevator was introduced in C3 with the Saltorians. I don't remember what else was in Module C3 when Module C3 came out, other than the Andromedans that I remember. It's been a while, but anyway. So that's why they introduced the whole idea of PA mines for the Andromedan. So it's interesting, you know, the whole temporal elevator is very temporal, very interesting. Well, going back to pre-plotted movement. Now, there are so many ways of doing pre-plotted movement. It's incredible. It's incredible. Obviously, some of these are automated systems. Pre-plot movement, the whole idea of that is that you would actually pre-plot movement for the whole turn. But you also, let me look. I just want to double check. I thought it was full turn. There's several variations of pre-plot movement. Number one is half turn plotted movement. So you plot movement. Half turn, you know, plot your movement for half your turn, so for 16 impulses. Now, there's certain interesting things, which is, of course, when it comes to seeking weapons. Seeking weapons, by definition, can't have plotted movement because of seeking weapons are following a ship, so there's no way to know exactly how it's going. And also, of course, the seeking weapons have to get closer to their target. That's part of the rules. Now, there are certain plottings you can do, and one of those is called pursuit plotting. Pursuit plotting, which when using various plotted systems, a unit can be directed simply to allow a given ship or other ship simply a specific hexamac. It's so directed that the unit is moved as if it were a seeking weapon. So, in theory, you can say, I'm going to do pursuit plotting, and that's what it's going to do. Definitely simplifies things. Should enter the occupied by the unit it was following, then be required by its speed to move out of the hex before it moves straight ahead. One hex begins pursuing the target again. Ships not using pursuit plume may adopt it at any point in the turn. It takes effect 4 impulses a quarter turn later. There's also evasive plotting. A unit may also use evasive plotting in which the unit always moves in such a way as to move further from a given unit. Basically, it's trying to stay away. The unit must, if possible, move in such a way to get no closer. Of course, then there's station keeping plot. A unit may also use station keeping plotting in which the unit always moves in such a way as to maintain or nearly as possible our attempt to restore the distance between the itself and any another unit, hex, or object based on the distance at the start of the turn. Another one is segmented plotting. The plot the unit activity for the first 8 impulses, which I think is more reasonable. At the end of impulse 4, the plot activities for nine through 12. At the end of impulse 8, plot 13 through 16, and so on. Thus, a player will be able to plot 4 to 8 impulses in advance. Players may experiment with combinations of 5 to 10, 15 to 30, 2 to 4. Players fill out their NGL cursor form at the end of, this is interesting. the players fill out their energy allocation form at the end of Impulse 28. Use D22 to resolve any energy imbalance at the end of the term. That's one thing that they mentioned here, which is, I'll get to that the D22 in just a bit, which is an interesting system, which is originally was part of the movement system, and then it was moved to it was made optional, and moved to a separate section, which was section D versus section C. Section C is movement. Okay, now. Levels of plotting, there are several levels of plotted movement. Under the more restrictive levels, all movement-based actions will be plotted. Under more liberal levels, many actions can be made freely. Note that various forms of segmented plotting are various of all levels, not a level themselves. Also note that energy allocation and movement plotting are related, but not the same. Allocating energy for a high energy turn is not the same as plotting for such a turn at a specific time, which is correct, because you can actually use reserve power to allocate a HET multiple impulses before you actually use that for the HET, which is something which is always interesting. Because what you would do, you would do that in the case of you think you'll lose all your batteries or enough batteries so you won't be able to HET. So you use up your batteries for that HET so that if when the batteries are destroyed, you can still do the HET. Now, this is always, when it comes to that particular possibility, it's always, it can be contentious. And that is proving that you actually use that energy at an impulse multiple times before it. So that, you know, if you hadn't done it when you're taking internals and you lost enough batteries, so you no longer could do HET from batteries, making sure, having it so that someone actually believes that you actually had pre-allocated the HET is kind of hard. You know? But anyway, okay. Here are some of the levels of plotting. Modified free movement. Players can perform speed increases and HETs and switch to and from rack maneuvering without prior plotting. You know, assuming energy is available, ba-bum, and so forth. Continued allocation is authorized for HETs, only for HETs and EM, not for speed changes. So, that would be crazy. But anyway, standard free movement, same as A, except unplotted speed changes are allowed. Next level is level C, which is liberal plotted movement. Same as C1 below, standard plotted movement, but PFs and satellite ships can be launched at any point with their movement for the remainder of the turn plotted at the time of launch. This level allows for unplotted use of HETs with the balance of movement plot rotated by the appropriate amount, or a HET can be used when converting to evasive plot. C1, of course, is standard plot movement. Plot all movement. Plot all movement, hex by hex, only for ships, including PFs. Shuttle and fighters are not plotted. Allow ships to change between pursuit, station keeping, and evasive according to the rules. So that's standard plotting, which I just described a little bit, though you can... Which is interesting, which is not plot your movement, but say you're going to use pursuit movement. Now, I'd have to look. Let me look at this for a moment because I have one question about pursuit, evasive, and station keeping. Right, okay. Okay, that's one thing. I have to ask, that's an interesting question. The question that I'm thinking in my head is, do you have to announce what kind of plotted movement you're, you know, automated movement you're using? Obviously, yeah. You know, it doesn't mention it, which to me means that in theory, you can switch between those without announcing it, but you have to record it. That would be my guess, because unfortunately it doesn't explicitly state that. And I'm willing to bet you nobody, and I mean nobody, has asked that question, because no one uses plotted movement that much anymore. You know, now the only time I've ever seen plotted movement used these days is when you want to, for a specific scenario where, in the case of, they're trying to simulate some interaction. For example, delayed communication. You tell the crew that we're going to do this, and the crew is groggy or whatever, so that action cannot take place for a couple of impulses. That's, you know, one way to modify plotted movement, or modify, you know. So that's the only time I think I've ever seen it. Okay, plotted shuttle movement, which is same as C1, but movement of shuttles must be plotted, which is, to me, is weird. No, the satellite ships being ships effectively use D1, while at C or C1, which is basically PFs and satellite ships have to use plotted movement. Optional shuttle movement, same as C1, but also requires that launch and recovery and movement of shuttlecraft, including fighters, satellite ships, and PFs, be plotted at the start of each turn. And then level E, which is restricted mine placement, same as D1, that's plotted shuttle movement, but also requires that the placement of the mines by transporter or by laying be plotted. As the use of transporters requires dropping a shield, a player can voluntarily cancel the plotted laying of mines by transport if he does not wish to drop the shields. So that's the interesting part, which is SMB has a lot of variations on plotted movement, which I think is interesting. Now, do people use it these days? No, they don't. I have to know anyone who uses plotted movement. They all of them use free movement, you know. But I think plotted movement actually can be quite interesting myself. Okay, let's talk about things that are always plotted and some things that are never plotted. Of course, one thing, of course, is mentioned about performing movement on section rule number C1.42, which is maximum speed. The maximum speed allowable in the game is speed 31. Now, see, plasma torpedoes and fast drones, which move speed 32, right? Other exceptions will be noted in specific rules. Enraged Mother Space Dragon or a striking moray eel, and C.145 handles these faster units. Talks about, in the movement section, also talks about having a controller, someone who actually runs the impulse chart. Okay. The faster movement, in very unusual cases, a unit could actually move under its own power two or three more hexes during a given impulse, which also a sabot would do the same thing. This can also happen when used moving on to two different forms of movement, such as normal engine power and black hole movement and on the same impulse. Of course, there's the interesting one, which is that you can move twice, but not two hexes if you are, if you've got someone tractored. Because if you both move that impulse, one person goes like this way. Now, this person, if they want to go side slip and push it again, that gets delayed to the next impulse, which is interesting, especially if you move next impulse. It gets nuts. The super fast unit complete its entire movement for that impulse at the point of the other impressions which they're scheduled to move. So if they're a monster, they move first, period, and they move all, do all their movement. Okay, closing trajectory. It is possible for that two units could be heading toward each other. It happened to moving on the same impulse. This can create lost fire opportunities. No kidding. Okay. They give an example here of what that looks like, but you know that's I'm not sure why it's even a rule, because it's a fact of life that you know you have two units closing on one another. I'm a little sleepy. I should have grabbed some coffee before I started the podcast, but I'll deal. Anyhow, it's possible that if you ever thought about it at all, SFB, you could have it so that you end up at range one, or even range three, and have it so that you miss a firing opportunity. And Lord knows if you ever have a unit that is moving faster than speed 32. Then yes, that can happen easily. Okay, there's no movement charts. Now, this is interesting, this little thing that they mentioned. And anyone who's actually owned the early versions of SFB knows about this, which is the earlier editions of Starfleet Battles included charts for various numbers of impulses so that the players could use the smallest number of impulses required for the speeds of the units in play, thereby saving themselves the trouble of going through the sequence of play for 32 times. However, these charts are now no longer included because of the problem in translating the time intervals required for various rules written for 32 impulses into various impulse intervals. Experienced players found that 30% impulse chart was actually more flexible and did not actually consume any more time. There are only so many weapons to fire anyway. There was also a problem of someone launching a fast-seeking weapon in the middle of the turn that was set up for a slower chart. The required switching charts in mid-turn, a procedure requiring high-order mathematics and a computer at least 5 megabytes of RAM. I can't believe they said that. Because these 5 megabytes of RAM? Really? That's nothing. That's nothing, honey. To state things clearly, more clearly, ignore rule C1.5. Which was the whole thing about using a smaller impulse charge, which is that existed. And of course these days, most people would look at the doing that and they're going, wait a minute, I'm missing opportunities. It's like, yeah, That's another problem there, which is that if you remove those impulses, you now remove the opportunity for the players to actually fire when they don't move. You know, and in some cases, good example, the Mizzi effect. You might have two impulses where you don't move. So you fire almost all of your weapons, or maybe you have half your weapons, whatever you want. But you leave some between two impulses where those two impulses, neither you nor your opponent moves. So then you can use the Mizzi effect or force your opponent to do a het on that second impulse, in which case it requires him to move, requires them, sorry, to move straight in the direction that they headed to for the next impulse that they move, which is also, a lot of times, is very awkward. It's one of those things that people still do, because there are times that you have to do it. The whole idea being that you have a down shield and you don't want your opponent firing that down shield again. That's the point. In which case, you'll be willing to take that, you know, the awkward step of having to move directly forward, which obviously can be problematic if you have transporters with T-bombs. You can have someone can run right into that T-bomb. And of course, a couple things, which is, of course, C1.6, which is, the rule is stacking. Guess what? No limit. You can stack as high as you want. You can put five ships or 1,000 ships. It's your choice when it comes to that, which is crazy. Of course, there's a mention in C.163, which is gross effects, explosions, terrain, and mines, and as well as while we use a collateral damage all units in the affected hex equally. So obviously that could be nasty. And of course, each count, as I mentioned also, that they say that each count is treated independently. Big surprise. And of course, C1.7, which is about ramming and collisions. And it states here, there is no provision in the Starfleet battles for ramming or colliding with another unit. No rules for this will ever be added to the game. Ramming is prohibited. Accidental collisions between units are so unlikely that as to be considered effectively impossible. Note that docking, landing shuttles, ESG interactions, which is quite a bit different, running into weapons, webs, which of course take up the entire hex, crashing the planets, which take up the entire hex, and seeking weapons impacts are not considered to be ramming, especially because the whole idea of the seeking weapons is that no, they don't actually ram to create the damage. They explode by not hitting it, but getting close and a proximity sensor to have, so it gets close and then blows up. Moving on, of course, energy cost of movement, which everyone knows that. Now, this is always interesting. Which is, of course, warp limit. There's no more than 30 movement points per turn can come from the warp engines. Note that this restriction generating 30 movement points is practical speed. This is where things get interesting. Now, I'm just wondering if it mentioned here, because I know what it means. Okay, yeah. Note that hets and rag maneuvers are rated in movement points, but are not included in this limit. In the practical speed, this paragraph is critical in interpretation of other rules and interaction with them. See also C 12.38 for an additional restriction. It should be noted that the warp tacticals don't come under this limit, since you can't do them at speed 30. It's pretty much irrelevant, which is true. There is, right now, right, you can combine them. Big surprise. Everyone knows you can combine both warp and impulse into movement, you know, so that if you want to, like, if you're going speed, if you have a movement cost of 2/3, you can, for 2/3, you can, for 16 points of power, you can move 24. If you move 25, you can do a single, you can either use an impulse, or you can actually use 2/3 power, which of course is cheaper. And that's why for hot warp, you're normally, you don't use impulse. But you might use impulse if you want to, well, as pointed out here, practical speed, the fastest you can go using warp is 30. So the only way, if you want, the fastest speed that a ship can go is 31. Well, the only way you're going to get to 31 is combination of warp and impulse. So you have to have use 30 points. Not 30 points. 30 movement points, which could cost you, in the case of 2/3 arming, 2/3 cost ship, it only costs you 20 points of power to get you 30 movement. But you can't get 31 movement without using an impulse. And of course, later on, I forget if it's in the movement section or I think it might be. No, actually, that's the G section, which is tractor beams. Because when you use tractor beams and you use impulse, that changes the calculation of what's called your pseudo speed, which is after you basically take the movement cost of both ships together, and then you say, okay, how much energy did you use to do movement? And that, given that, that's your speed. Now, if you use impulse and your opponent does not, then you can add your impulse, your plus one speed, to that speed after the calculation, which makes things interesting because what you have to, yeah, it gets interesting. Okay, of course, it's staying obvious, which is non-moving objects. Certain units, primary bases, have no engines and never move. Yeah, stating the obvious. Okay. Continuous power requirement. It is necessary to keep expending power every turn to maintain movement. For example, if a given ship with a movement cost of one expends 10 points of movement for turn one and then three for turn two, then speed on turn number three is 3, not 10 or 13. In other words, so mentioning that star bleak battles is not vector based, meaning that you get the speed that you allocated for. Then there's a speed limit. Here it is. Now we get to acceleration. Movement translates speed is not in pure sense movement, but rather warping the space around the starship. As this is the case, there's no need for periods of acceleration, quote unquote, as such. However, The energy conversion and transmission systems at the ship cannot suddenly change from start to 512 times the speed of light, warp 8. The time they require to generate the bending of space effectively creates a requirement for quote-unquote acceleration. And of course, as most people know, maximum increase for a speed is going to be either twice your current speed or plus 10. So if you are going speed 4, the previous speed, previous turn, you can go actually speed 14. But if you're going speed 15, you can go all the way up to speed be 30 because double is greater. This is one. Okay, C2.3, and this is the one I was I mentioned earlier, which is deceleration due to damage, which is an interesting idea. But when a ship takes damage in combat, its speed may be reduced in midterm by damage to its engines. In this case, you use the procedure D22 of advanced missions to resolve the energy balance resulting from damage whenever damage reduces the number of energy boxes. Note that this procedure will affect more than just movement. This procedure was originally defined in Rule C.2.3, but was moved to D22 when it was revived and greatly expanded. But also, if I recall correctly, I have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure, well, I know it is, which is energy balance due to damage is an optional rule. Because Lord knows. Okay. The good thing about that, by adding that, is it makes it kind of more realistic of the rules. So that'd be kind of interesting to do. I've never ever played with it. I don't know anyone who has yet. It's possible. And if you have, please tell me. And tell me how. Yeah. If you have used it, tell me about it. Tell me about the experience. Because I can imagine the issue. Now, the thing is, if you really think about this for a moment, when it comes to energy balance due to damage, how often do you actually take damage in a turn? You might take, damage 2, maybe 3 times a turn. I mean, I'm talking about on average. You know, Chris just mentioned that even Steve Cole called energy balance due to damage. He called it a crazy rule that no one used, and you can understand why, because of what it requires you to do is so much when you get damaged. Then you have to basically reallocate all your energy. You know, when it comes to, you might actually have to slow down. There's hierarchies of where the energy will be shunted off to. What's more important? First, you know, obviously, I think one of the top ones close to the top is going to be reinforcement. That's one of the things that will go away. And then I think it's weapons and then movement is last. I think that's right. But you know, it's one of those rules as mentioned that no one ever uses, and as I said, I'm pretty sure I'm actually confident that in saying that it is a optional rule. And also they talk about here, which is effective speed, pseudo speed, and movement rate. And of course, practical speed. Practical speed is the actual speed generated by the unit. Effective speed is the actual number of hexes that the unit moves during the turn, or the rate in which, in the term of hexes per turn at its current speed, plus the cost of erratic maneuvers. So effective speed is actually, you include erratic maneuvers in that speed, in effective speed. Pseudo speed is used for moving while linked with another ship, which uses its energy for movement. In effect, both units are towing each other at the same time. Pseudo speed is used for purposes of G7.36 and turn modes C2.46, which is, yeah, I am looking at C2.46, and I don't see. Right, it just mentioned go to G.36B to calculate the actual pseudo speed. But as I mentioned before, it's basically you calculate how much energy is for movement that both ships used. You total that up together, and then you use the movement cost. Get this right. Yeah. You can try to figure out how much. Okay. Right. Right. Then you, at that point, you use the movement cost to figure out how fast you actually are moving. I think opposite of the movement cost. Forget. But basically, I have to look it up to describe it correctly. Of course, we can move on to turning and turn modes. That's one of those features of SFB, which is really a great feature, which is the whole idea of turn modes. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show a chart which, if you have ever used the actual original rules, or even the Commander's Edition, this chart here was in that rule book. Because it goes through some of the early ships, ships in the basic set. And then you look at some of these turn modes, and I look at the turn mode F, which is, okay, if you're going speed 30, your turn mode is 8. That means you have to go straight ahead 8 hexes, and then you can turn 1 hex side. You can change 1 hex side at that point. And of course, you got double A, B, C, D, boom. Don't mind me. I'm pretty sure that all. Okay, well, I'm assuming A can also, but I'm pretty sure like all double A ships are, just because the nature of the ship, are nimble. Because, come on, if they're not nimble, I'd like to know what is. So that's the description of what turn modes is for those of you who don't know, which I'd be shocked. Which is, turn modes are basically that you can change your ship 1 hex side. You can start turning. You can turn the ship based on the number of hexes you've gone straight. So in your turn mode itself, how many times you have to go straight is defined by the speed you're going. So the faster you're going, the bigger the turning radius for the ship is. versus, you know, when you're slower, you can actually turn more quickly. And if you ever driven, you know, that makes absolute and total sense. But you're going to have it so that to stay on the road, you have to take a faster turn, you know, the wider arc than you do for a slower turn. If you're going slower, you can actually turn the car safely, that is, closer radius. So, right. Restrictions on turn noise are carryovers, of course, which is a carryover goes from one turn to the other. At the beginning of a game, you always start with a turn mode of zero, unless otherwise specified. Speed changes don't reset your turn mode, but obviously it changes your turn mode itself. So if you're going speed 15 and then you go and you down crank down to speed 10, you might have gone from a turn mode of 3 to a turn mode of 2, which is kind of a neat idea with mid-turn speed changes if you think about it, which is using the mid-turn speed change to basically turn more quickly at a certain point and moment in time in the game without using a HET. Because you don't see, that's one thing. If you can plot it out properly, if you can't plot it out, I know that sometimes you can't, but if you can plot it out so that you can actually reduce your speed, get the turn mode in place, and then crank it back up, you might save yourself the HET, which in some cases, that's the one thing with the HET, is that with a high energy turn, HET, you can most people try to keep it available as a emergency maneuver. After you used up your bonuses at that point, which means then you have to roll. That's for some of the ships. Obviously, some of the ships are so poorly, not poorly structured. They're just not designed for it. Or really hits. You can be rolling, doing a roll for a successful hit anyway. But anyway, but the beauty of being able to basically crank it down, you know, do this mid-turn speed change, is that you can do that without using a HET, because you might want, if you can possibly avoid either using your HET bonus, or more importantly, if you can avoid doing a HET when you don't have a HET bonus. So, now reversing direction, that's, you can do that, it just takes a bit of time. And that is that, as it mentions here on C3.51, ships may not mix forward and reverse movement during the second ascending turn. Okay, there's braking energy. Before a ship can reverse direction, however, it must pay braking energy, cost equal to the speed of the previous turn. This energy must be warp energy, except one point, maybe impulse, big surprise. Braking energy required based on the cost of movement, not on number of hexes. Right. So in other words, if you want to change directions between turns, and you're going speed 15 on turn 1. On turn 2, if you want to go reverse 5, you have to pay for 15 points of energy, you know, 15 movement costs of energy, which might be 15 points of 15 points of energy, and then you'd have to still expend an additional 5 points to go in reverse. So that's 20 points of power to go from positive 15 to negative 5. Now, and okay, breaking energy costs as movement for purposes of cloaks while weasels. Breaking energy reduces the ship to a speed, normal speed of zero, from which point it can accelerate within its normal limits in the opposite direction. The energy spent by braking is part of the maneuver rate, but does not count for purposes of acceleration. So, in theory, that means that you can go from, my example, you can go from positive 15 to a negative 10 in one turn. Now, it costs you 25 movement energy of 25 movement points, which could be 25 points of energy or whatever, depends upon the movement cost of the ship. Yeah, when using, okay, here's a gotcha. When using mid-turn speed change, braking energy is based on the highest speed in the previous 8 impulses. So, if you, like, let's go back to the example of speed 15. If you were going speed 15 forward, but then around speed, let me see, last 8 impulses. So, impulse 24, you change your speed down to speed 10. Or, yeah, 10, because you only can reduce your, you only can decelerate by half your movement. So you can do, you can move, go down to 10. Obviously, you can go all the way down to, I think, I forget if you round up or not, whether it be 7 or 8, if going from 15. Let's say 10. So that last, an impulse to go down to speed 10. So that means you only have to pay braking energy for 10. You know, so, which is definitely useful. Now, the next rule is about quick reverse. Quick reverse allows you to basically change directions, but you don't pay the full energy cost for braking. So, and if you use a quick reverse, the ship rolls a die. That's interesting. Ships don't roll dice. The player rolls the dice for the ship. In the movement segment of the impulse, which the direction is reversed, roll on impulse number one if the event is between turns. If the die roll is less than or equal to the shortage of braking energy expressed in terms of movement points, not energy points, the ship suffers a breakdown, and you don't want to break down. So basically, if you decide to be cheap, you can get away with it, but you have to roll the dice. And if, if you don't roll as okay, less than or equal to. So in this case, you want to roll high. So if you're short by 4, if you roll a 5 or a 6, you're fine. But if you roll a 1, 2, 3, or 4, then you break down. And all kinds of nastiness when it comes to breakdowns. It's the same, use the same penalties as a HET breakdown. Quick mention of course, base rotations. The base is set on a certain rotation rate, and that's set before the scenario begins. And it can do a rate of 4, 3, 2, or 1. For rate of 4, it moves on impulse 4, 12, 28, sorry, 20 and 28. So, which is interesting. Okay, now, another advanced thing, which is, a lot of people have used this rule a lot, which is, of course, side slips, which is you have a side slip mode of 1. So for every hex you move directly ahead, you can side slip you know, to the right or to the left one time. So you can do one, and then slide step one, then go a straight one, and then go slide step one again. So, which is quite nice. Let me just do a quick. Just want to show the chart, because I think the chart is actually, it's very useful in this manner, which is, okay, you got the turns. This is the turn. This is a side slip. And here's an example of, which is, anyone who's actually played SFB has seen this, or at least, which is, okay, this guy, he's going straight, then he turns, and then he side slips to the right, goes straight, side slips to the right, and then turns again. And it's explained in the rules. I did not read it, but I'll give my own take on it, which is the whole idea of a side slip is to make up for the use of a hex board. Of course, tactical maneuvers, we all know about those, which is if your speed zero, you can actually tack. Now, warp tacks can only do those four times a turn, and you earn them. You earn them. The first tack is earned on impulse two. The next one is on impulse nine, then 17, and finally 25. I think I got that right. Let me just double check on that, which is impulse two. Sorry. Impulse 2, 8, 16, and 24 is when they are earned. I am incorrect. And of course, you can also use a impulse tack at any time in the turn. You earn that as of impulse 2. Now, you only can do one tack per impulse, though. You can use either warp or impulse tack. You can't use both. Now, there's one thing which is an interesting rule which not everyone remembers, which is, it's called the zero energy turn. So if you get into a situation where you put no energy, zero energy into movement at impulse 32, you can make one tack for free. And they say here, they describe it as basically this tactical maneuver can only be used on impulse 32. This represents the nominal effect of a ship's altitude thrusters, which are normally used for docking purposes. They operate on puffs of compressed gases as early spacecraft did. The whole idea being that even if you have no energy for movement, you don't do any, you can, if on impulse 32, you can still move. If you're so low in energy that you decide that you didn't put anything to movement, you, if you want to, you can still tack. You can still have one tack, which can be very useful in the situations where you're running really low on energy because there you got many, many holes in your ship. So I thought that was kind of one of those things that's really important. Of course, the whole idea of you can do tactical maneuvers in mid-turn in two situations. One, if you do a mid-turn speed change down to zero. The other one, of course, is an emergency deceleration. There's another one that will allow you to actually do attack in mid-turn. If you had been moving previously, of course, the next section is section C6, which is high energy turns. They can be done on the contingency basis, which means you don't have to allocate all 5 points of power. Five movements. 5 points of power equal points of, okay, energy, which is equivalent to 5 movement points. Okay, that's the best way to put it. Having problems describing that. And you can either do contingency basis, which just means you don't have to allocate all the energy. That's another thing that you have to remember, is that in theory, this is a little different for Andromedans, but that's energy balance system. Some of the stuff does not apply to Andromedans. But in the case of a normal ship, you can actually, you can do contingent planning of pay like 2 points or 3, whatever you want. You don't have to pay for all 5 movement points, energy equivalent to 5 energy points. You don't have to do that. You can do contingency plotting, and so that you only need to use some of your reserve power to do your head. It's one of those times that, tactically speaking, if you're in the middle of a situation and you feel like you will be tacking, but you still want some flexibility, you don't have to use all of your power and your batteries. You'd rather pre-allocate it. Obviously, if you can pre-allocate the whole thing, then that changes things quite a bit. But if you're hedging your bets, you don't have to pre-allocate the whole thing. So that's something to keep in mind. Okay, anything else? Of course, talk about the breakdown. Breakdown is really bad. Let me just look at this. Effects of a breakdown. Okay. A ship that suffers breakdown receives the following. 1/3 of the crew units, dead. Okay, every 5th warp engine box is gone. And also the ship suffers 2 points of damage. Now, as mentioned here, the phaser directional restriction does not apply, which means that it can hit any phaser on the entire ship. Some other things that are minor things, which is, of course, the breakdown reduces the breakdown rating for the ship. So if you had a breakdown rating of 5-6, it's now 4-5-6. Stasis fields and ESGs generated by the ships that suffered a breakdown, well, they stop working. No deck crew activities are performed during, so anything that you were doing during that turn, those go, they get flushed. And then, of course, after the breakdown, there's restrictions for the next eight impulses. No weapons can be fired, no shuttles, PS, satellite ships, or fighters may be launched or recovered. No seeking weapons may be launched during this time, but only plasma torpedo may be launched using during this time, but only on the 8th impulse after destruction of the launcher, which is interesting. No transporters or tractor beams can be used. And if a ship is docked inside a larger ship, the larger ship suffers a breakdown. The ship inside also suffers the full effect of the breakdown, which is nasty. And of course, then we have the whole fun of tumbling effect. Yay! Tumbling effect is quite interesting in that you keep moving, which in some cases is a good thing. Instead of being dead in space, you're now moving. You can't fire for any impulses, but you're still moving. So that's a good thing. Okay, I think I will wrap up. Let's see if there's anything else. Disengagement, who cares? Emergency deceleration, I mentioned that before, which is basically You can announce that on any impulse, and you will stop the ship. Now, you can't do attack for four impulses after until four impulses are done after you have completed your emergency deceleration. Fun one, which is positron flywheel rule, which is optional rule. Don't ever let anyone tell you, oh, we should play with this rule. No. The whole idea of it is crazy. Here's where it's described. Scientists in Federation and all other empires have experimented with the concept of the positron flywheel effect. This method is storing warp energy momentum temporarily. If used by a starship, the effect allows the starship to increase speed more rapidly after a temporary reduction of speed. Despite billions of credits spent on research and development by the Federation, the positron flywheel never did work, and its use in the game is considered experimental and only for the purpose of evaluating the potential effect if it had. Note, this rule is classed as experimental and is not considered in balancing other rules. It should never be used in competitive gaming, at least not as a player selected option. Yeah, because what it allows you to do is just, it's nuts. Because basically what you can do, let me see if I get this right, which is, okay. A ship equipped with a Tron flywheel uses the fastest speed in the four previous turns as a basis of acceleration. So, if you go speed like 21 on speed turn 1, go speed 4 on speed 2, on speed 3, on turn 3 you go 4, and turn 4 you go, let's say, 8. On turn 5, you can go speed 31. So it's like, yeah. No. It's a crazy, crazy, crazy thing. Anything else? I think I'll let the rest of it go. Because otherwise we're going to have a really, really late night. So, we got through all the way to C9 of the movement rules. Obviously, if you have any questions, I know I went through them pretty quick. I hit some of the, I felt like the high points of movement and the movement rules. And if you dislike that I went through the movement rules, please feel free to ting me. You know, send me an email to sfuoncall.com. I'm sorry, sfuoncall@gmail.com. I don't have an email set up for SFUOnCall. Yeah, there's a lot of interesting rules in SFB that people don't really look at. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.